So if you are compensated in any sense, whether how big or small, for something that you've contributed creatively, then you have a career.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Today's conversation is with Lawrence Yeo. He is the founder and creator of More to That, a website that has incredible blogs that are and stories. He's a course creator. You also learn about the importance of picking a creative pursuit in a field that you really want to grow into, how creativity comes in many different forms, and why agency is a core piece of it. And particularly, we really wanted to dive into Lawrence's recent essay called The Arc of the Practical Creator and the three stages of it. And so we dive into all three stages and what that means for creators. Let's say you've got a podcast. Let's say you're a writer. Let's say you're publishing a newsletter. This episode is for you. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and FriendSource job opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here you go with Lawrence.
Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here.
So, we were jamming out to a little bit of music before, the Blue Note, and talk to us a little bit about music production and kind of how you got started there.
Yeah, music for me was one of, you know, just like those creative outlets that we were just talking about earlier, just trying to find an avenue of expression. And before music, you know, so I graduated with a degree in economics. I had no idea what the hell I wanted to do with it. I just knew that if I got this degree, something might happen, something might pop off. And then kind of just went to the traditional route of finance and quickly realized that this was purely a resource generating move for me just to make money. And I wanted another way of communicating things that I was feeling out into the world that went beyond spreadsheets and models and formulas and stuff like that. And I've always been a big hip hop head. So I've just really, really enjoyed that genre ever since I was really young. And I started getting into, you know, learning how to make beats and figuring out that some of my favorite songs were sampled. And that whole thing blew my mind. And I just went head deep into that whole realm. So I started to get into music production and beat making specifically. And I released the Blue Note in 2011, but when I was kind of en route to that, I was still working and I was trying to figure out when I could make the move to music production full time, because that was my goal. I wanted to get into a creative endeavor full time, but I needed to figure out what that might look like. So, and maybe we'll get into this a little bit more because this is kind of linked to a piece I recently wrote, but this notion of what it is like to take a leap when it comes to stuff like this and how to approach it in a practical sense. So I really viewed finance as the launching pad in terms of getting myself in order for this leap to feel like a more logical next step instead of just jumping into an unknown abyss. So I continued to make music while working and kind of built up both of those things together. And I released that album, and I don't know if it was before or after, but at some point I did quit my finance job to jump into music full time. And then that opens up a whole nother rabbit hole, which we can go into or cannot, depending on where you want to take this, man.
Yeah. So I did want to, you know, the focus of this conversation, I did want to talk about your recent blog post about the arc of the practical creator. So what I heard there was about, you know, kind of seemed like you got exposed to this music production and then got really excited about it. And then you were like, wow, how do I make this a full-time thing? Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. And I don't know how many people generally tend to think that way, or if I think there's multiple routes you could go here. Is one, you find something that you just can't stop thinking about and you want to work on further. And the first thing you think is, I want to make this my full-time gig, right? And then there's the other route here where you find something that you're deeply passionate about, but you understand that, hey, I want this to just be a side thing, and I'm perfectly happy with that being a side thing. Now, I think when I was on that thought about, I want this to be a full-time job, I was looking at it through the lens of, what if I had 40 hours a week to work on this? So it was really done through the lens of time. And given that I'm so conditioned to view work in the span of time, I was thinking that if I had all this time available to me, then what can this become? That was more of my mindset. And I felt like I was just constrained by my responsibilities at work and so forth, the kind of usual thing you would hear about that. But in my case, I knew that I wanted to be a full-time endeavor, not just because of the time, but I really felt like this was what I was supposed to be doing with my time. And in a way where it felt like I was actualizing whatever creative potential I had within me. And I think that's the other variable too, is what is, how much do you believe in this notion of potential, and how much of it just sounds like kind of woo-woo to you? And I think to me, there really was a strong sense that there is a potential within me that needs to be actualized, but it requires time and energy that is being taken up somewhere else. So there are many ways you could approach it, though. It's kind of like, if you want to just go head first into that, like if you view this through the lens of energy, then what money affords you is this kind of energy that you don't have to dedicate to worrying about money when you're on this path, right? On this kind of new path here. So I understood that dynamic, and I knew that if I just quit everything and went into it full time, but I felt like this thing needed to make money and this needed to sustain me immediately, then it would take away from the energy that I could dedicate to my craft. And instead I would think about, well, how can I monetize this? How can I get this out into the world faster? Like everything seems accelerated. So at the same time, even though I wanted this to be full time, I knew that I needed to take my time with my craft. So there was a sense of, I knew the patience required in order for me to bring out the best in myself. And that patience, then that ability to push forward with that, needed to be buffeted really by some sort of money cushion and an ability to just dedicate my energy fully towards that. So I was kind of balancing these things out when I was making the decision to go into it full time.
Okay. And now what's your relationship with music production now?
I don't do it anymore. I am on this kind of long-term hiatus. I love music. It will always be my companion. But I started to grow a little bit disillusioned with music as a career. And I think this is also a very important thing to internalize, is like, what about a specific art form? Like, what does that bring out in you? And with music, what I realized is that it was a great way of conveying emotion and how I was feeling at a certain point. And as a listener, when you listen to music, especially just instrumental music, you might be able to get a sense of like, oh, that guy was a little sad, or he was ecstatic when he was making this. But you can't really get too much deeper than that. So it's like this interpretation of emotion that's being channeled through music. And first off, I realized that I was much more attuned to the realm of ideas than emotion when it comes to conveying my creativity out into the world. So I realized that music wasn't the proper conduit. And also second, I didn't really like how I needed to position myself as a musician to get my work out. Music is notoriously the space where it's about who you know and about who you could kind of latch onto and ride that wave up. And especially as a producer, it's about like, okay, who can I get up to rap on my stuff or sing on my stuff and things of that nature. So it was always about partnership, but in a way where I felt like I had to rely on status games so much to do that. And I didn't like how it was contingent upon that. So around the time I was getting a little disillusioned with that, I first thought that it was just because my creative muscle was atrophying and that I wasn't producing enough music for me to really feel like I was a musician. So I did this project called 60 Days, where I made a beat every single day for 60 days. And this was, I think, in 2016 or so forth. And what I initially thought was, I'm going to make a beat and then I'm going to write like two paragraphs about this beat. Because I knew that if I make this beat, I'm only conveying emotion. I'm not telling the listener what exactly was going through my mind. Maybe this beat had an idea embedded in it. So it was my way of kind of marrying those two things. And while I did make a beat every day for 60 days, I wrote twice for those days because it was just way too much to handle every single day. So I was like, fuck this. And I went with the music. But that was my first foray into, this whole writing thing is interesting. It's introducing a new dimension to how I have to think about things. And once I started to open up that rabbit hole a little bit, then it introduced me to something completely different. And it really got me to understand that, okay, there are different ways that I can express myself that I didn't know of and that I'm not anchored to. And even though it was really difficult for me to let go of music, it wasn't like this, oh, I quit mentality. It was like this gradual kind of fade out as the vigor of writing gradually began to fade in. So it was a nice blend of those two things that allowed me to kind of find this new path of writing.
Okay. And so a new path of writing that kind of really started to pick up 2018 around then. Is that how you kind of think the beginning or of full time into more to that?
Yeah. So with writing, like I said, I was writing maybe in like 2015, 2016 already. But that was purely just experimental. I was just messing around with random things. I had a personal Medium page that I was just writing on that most people don't know about. And then I started to get a little more serious about it, but it actually kind of fell in line with, so the timeline is I went to music full time and then I actually went back into finance again after some time. And then during this time, I started messing around with writing a little bit more. And this is when I had the personal Medium page and so forth. But I didn't really start getting serious about how I want to think of presenting my ideas until around 2018. So with writing, I was just maybe taking like 2 hours or so on a piece and just publishing it an hour or two, one sitting, letting it out. But I realized that I could actually sit and write for much longer than that. And I actually started to develop this general love for just digesting ideas and then finding different ways to present them in the form of stories. But I needed to know what it felt like to actually sit with this and see if this is something that I could really love and enjoy doing. So I worked on a couple pieces that took me maybe 80 to 100 hours to do for each one. So this was a whole different dynamic. And I found that I really enjoyed doing it, surprisingly. And I think that's a good thing to also internalize as a creator is it's not just about what is the art form that is going to get your words and thoughts out there, but more of what can you sit with for long periods of time and not just find the enjoyment in, but really find that this challenge is worthwhile. And I think for music, it didn't really feel that way to me. I was just like getting through making the beat. And also like I was drinking beforehand and it just felt like the habits weren't really a good indicator that this was the right way for me to express myself. But with writing, I really liked how I needed to be clear-headed. I needed to be focused. I needed to think of different ways that I wanted to piece these puzzles together. And also the fact that I could sit there and work on things for hours at a time showed me that this is something that is worth delving more into. And then on top of that, I also used drawings and illustrations because this was a marriage of my childhood self. And all the characters that you would see on More to That or the drawings that I put out there are all characters that I drew when I was like 10, 9 or 10 years old, right? So I always joke that if my 9 or 10 year old self saw the drawings that I'm drawing now, he'd be like, bro, you like never evolved. You just never evolved. Just kept at it, huh? And like, I think there's also a beauty in that, because this is a clear indicator that this is my inner child coming out to play. So it really, I don't know, it really made me feel like this was what I wanted to do as a kid in some sense. And at the same time, this was an area where I could invest so much time into. And keep in mind, this was before any external validation. I was just making stuff on my own, just intrinsically motivated. So even if no one read it, even if no one cared, can I still create this? And the answer was yes. So after I built maybe like two or three posts, I kind of decided which one I want to publish first in the form of this new project I was going to call More to That. And I read one of the pieces to my wife, which was called Travel is No Cure for the Mind. And she said, that's it. That's the one. Yeah, do that one. And I published it in March of 2018. And that's how More of That started. And I'm still going strong with that.
Wow. Lots to unpack there. While you're, you know, you kind of shared your story into becoming a professional or professional creator, talk to us about, and the piece that I wanted to talk about is the arc of practical creator. And you mentioned about this idea about kind of diving into a piece and really kind of immersing yourself. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this piece took a couple of months to put together. And
yeah.
And what while you were putting that together, like, what do you think was the big unlock, or what was kind of missing that it took so long? And I've never written a major piece like that. So, but I'm wondering if there was like a missing piece and to then get it to the finish line.
Yeah. So when I say that it took a couple of months, it wasn't like I was working on it every day for a couple of months. It was more so that I was working on it. I had this sprint where I was working on it. And then there was like a period of a month or so that I just didn't touch it. And I was doing other things, but it wasn't really the other things per se, but it was more so also that when it comes to these deep dive pieces, sometimes what's just as valuable as the energy you put into it is the moments you take away from it. And just to walk away for a bit and understand, okay, what exactly am I trying to convey here? And why am I putting this together in the first place? Right. So a lot for maybe out of those 4 months, like maybe it was just a few weeks where I was actually creating and drawing and stuff like that for it. But I still consider that off time as part of the creative process. And this is another thing that I write about too. So I have this piece called Creativity Starts Before Anything Is Made, where a lot of writers especially think that, well, writing starts when you're in front of the computer, or you have a pen out and you're putting it to paper, and the act of writing is what it means to create. But I think the misconception is that a lot of time writing is just like the final phase of the entire process. It's just your way of thinking through all these other experiences and all these things that you've read and trying to distill it into your own unique voice, right? So it's hard to just say that, okay, you're going to bang out this piece and then like that was the creative process. No, everything tangential to that, everything that you don't see, everything that's localized to your own experience, to your own consciousness, that's all part of this piece. So I think for the arc of the practical creator post, it was more of, okay, I knew that I had this general framework intact from the beginning where I'm drawing this arc and there's three stages here going on. But a big part of why it also took me a while was to understand, okay, what does it mean to be in that final stage? And maybe we could walk through this a little bit more. So there are essentially three stages in what I call the arc of the practical creator, where you are balancing the passionate drive to actualize your creative self with the practical elements of making money and how is this going to be a sustainable endeavor. And a lot of people throw out this advice of, hey, you just keep going and then you will succeed, right? It's the whole like don't disrupt the worst thing to do with compounding is to disrupt it early, right? Just keep going and then you'll see the compounding take place. And there is truth to this. There is truth to this, but the one thing that I do with more to that is to always explore the nuances of any of this stuff. And when it comes to making your creative endeavor a practical one, there is so much nuance that even in the way that I communicated this post, like there's more nuance to uncover, but at a certain point you have to stop and say, okay, I have to simplify this to its most essential, and here is what I have right now. So what that came down to was three stages. And the first stage is when you're getting started, that advice of just keep going, it's not, yeah, I can see how it's inspirational, but it's not practical because you're not making any money from doing this. And it's easy and it's sexy to attribute success to persistence, but it's not as sexy to attribute it to the fact that you had a financial safety net that could buffer you against failure. And I really wanted to hone in on that piece because it's so crucial to making a leap feel like a next logical step or a hop. So the first stage is about prioritizing money. So even if you are really invested in your creative endeavor and you have this desire to just jump into it full time and to invest all your energy into it, pause here and understand that if you're viewing your creative endeavor as a career, then money has to come with that territory. And if you're starting out, you're not going to make money from this because in the beginning, I hate to say it to you, but no one cares. So even if you're intrinsically motivated, you have to be able to have some sort of resource pool in place for you to allow that patience to do its thing. So the way I reframe this is that, like, if you have a day job, then your day job, instead of just viewing it as like, okay, all right, let's do this 9 to 5, 9 to 6 thing, and then now I can spend an hour or two at the end, but I got to endure this hell just to do what I want to do. Instead of viewing it that way, what if you view your day job as a patron of your art? And I discussed the concept of the Renaissance, or during the Renaissance, right? The way in which Leonardo da Vinci had all this free time to do what he wanted to do, or Titian to be able to create these beautiful works of art, is that they had the Medici family, the Gonzaga family, respectively, act as patrons of their art. And this was a widely adopted model. And yes, that model exists today through like Patreon and all these things like that, but even for these crowdsourcing platforms, you have to have a crowd to care about your work in the first place. So that doesn't give much, it doesn't give much comfort to a creator. So rather than viewing it that way, what if you just view your day job as the patron that is funding your art, right? So you kind of approach this job with this notion of tolerance. Like, hey, okay, I am thankful to have this, but the only way this will work, and this is a huge caveat, is that you must spend a portion of your day, each day, working on the thing that you want to become your career. Because if you don't do that, you're deluding yourself into thinking that this will be a career at some point. Because while you have a patron there alleviating your money worries, you want to build up that foundation for your skill set, whether it's to build an audience or to continue writing. You want to have that happen concurrently. And it's very important that these happen at the same time. So by balancing this, and you continue to do this over whether it's a year or two, however long you want to give yourself, or however long it means to have enough before you can go into your next stage here, you need to prioritize money in that first stage. Not sexy to admit, but it's something that's important through the eyes of what I call a practical creator. You want me to go on to the next two stages?
Yeah.
Okay, so now in the second stage, I call this the Great Plateau, where let's say you have taken a leap, and it might not have been that you quit your job. Let's say that you even just moved to a different industry where you had a big pay cut, but you knew it was more aligned with what you really wanted to do. But let's just say you are a content creator and you leave your job, and then you feel like, okay, I have this nest egg, even though it's not huge, it feels like it's enough for me to not be so worried about money. So let's say you have that and you kind of press onward. Here is the other important thing, is that just because you have now 40 hours a week, 60 hours a week, whatever you want to dedicate to your craft, does not mean that the results just come in and follow your expenditure of effort. And this is something that's important to understand, because we are conditioned throughout our time on this earth that an investment of effort leads to the arrival of a reward, right? It's like, hey, clean your room, you'll get pizza for dinner. All right. Hey, you do well on this test, you'll get into that good school. Bing, what happens? I got into this school. Do well in that job interview, you get that job and that salary, right? This causal chain of expectation is reinforced throughout our time here. The thing about creative endeavors, though, is that there is no reason for society to value what you're doing. There is no immediate reason, right? And the reason why you get a salary, for example, at a job is because people know what to expect of you right away. They know that they tell you that what they'll pay you for a whole year before you know what the hell you're doing, before you even step foot in that office. So there is some expectation that they have from you right away. With creative endeavors, it's completely different. There is no reason for people to reward you for whatever, even though you have the best ideas, even though you have something that's so valuable to contribute. You have to convince others of that value of what you're providing. And this not only takes time, but it takes a huge front loading of effort in order for a tiny bit of reward to start shining through. So this period where you are just putting in all this energy, you have all this time that you're putting in, but not seeing anything as a result, that's what I call the Great Plateau. And the key to really endure that is to, yes, have certain element of patience, but the texture of that is different. In stage one, the patience you had to embody was tolerance for this day job for your patron. In stage two, the texture of patience is more about persistence, right? It's about the ability to keep going, to stay intrinsically motivated, even if the external validation isn't quite what you were expecting. And by progressing through it in this way, now, I'm not going to say it's inevitable that things will start popping off. And this is something that I also mentioned in the post, is that you have to do a careful audit of progress along the way. And there are two ways you could do this audit. One is externally, which is a little more obvious in the sense that, okay, even if I don't have this huge email list or what is this huge audience, am I still seeing small signals of external validation, right? It's like, are there people outside of my friends and family that have known me since I was 5 years old that are resonating with my work? Let's say I talked to someone that I admire and they said, hey, just keep going. It might be like a one sentence thing, but did I see something like that? These are signs that, okay, there's some sort of signal here for you to follow. Now, the second thing is about an intrinsic audit, right? Where what you do is you take a look at something that you have created maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, even a few months ago. And does that kind of make you cringe looking at it? Does it make you feel like, ah, shit, man, that's, I don't know about this. Like, you just can't
finish reading. First couple episodes, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure if we put on your very first episode right now, you're like, oh my God, turn that off, turn that off. So like these kinds of things like are indicators that you, who you are now, you have really upped your skill set to a way where even the compass of your intuition is showing you that as well. And intuition is such it's such an important thing to cultivate, and that comes with repetition, that comes with practice. And if you find that what you're doing now is orders of magnitude better in your own mind, in your own intuitive sense, because remember, the external validation piece may be low, but if you feel that on your own, then that's also a clear signal that, okay, let's just keep going here. And given that you have a resource pool that you've set up. Now, remember that resource pool, that represents the hard limit of your patience, because you can keep going here, take all these signals in, but if you run out of money, then you got to go back into stage one again. But if you happen to do that, where you go get a job to help support you, you could either view that as demoralizing or you could view that as empowering, right? And the way you internalize that will give you the space whether you're going to progress forward or not. So that's another thing to understand as well. But let's just say that with stage two, you know, you're putting in the effort, you're putting in all this attention, and then things start to materialize, right? The audience starts to grow and some viable paths start to present themselves. Then you're in that final stage, which is what I call navigating the creative career. And the thing that I want to emphasize with this space is that when you first enter in this territory, you're not sure if you're there or not yet. Mm. So I remember last year I told my wife, hey, one thing I wanted to accomplish this year is I want more of that to become my career. And then she told me, well, what are you talking about? It already is your career. And I was like, fuck. Wow, I think you're right. And I think she saw it before I did. And that was like a big reframe too, because what I was thinking about in terms of like what is a career is that like you have to be accomplished, right? Especially as a creator. It's like you have to have certain milestones in place. Like you have to have an audience of a certain size, and that's when you feel like you have a career. But no one thinks that you have to be the CEO or a vice president of a company to justify your career there, right? If you're an entry-level analyst, you already have a career. That's the beginning of a career. So if you are compensated in any sense, whether how big or small, for something that you've contributed creatively, then you have a career. So with that in mind, I knew that, okay, I am on route here. I am on a career path. And the key with this stage is not to think of it as, okay, stage three is easier than stages one or two, right? Because a lot of people think that once you're in stage three, then you have it all figured out, everything's great. But the punchline here is that there is no easier or harder. Like there is just challenge. And that's the point of a creative endeavor. The point of a creative endeavor is that the scope of any creative problem feels larger than our capacity to solve it. And that's what makes it so worthwhile, because it's so challenging. So a big part of stage three is about managing the dynamics of, okay, I'm confident now as a creator, but how do I not let the grubby hands of arrogance start coming in and coloring my view of what I'm doing? What does it mean to cultivate judgment in a space where I kind of have to keep going? And what does it mean to slow down and to balance that? To not get too caught up in the hustle and bustle of all this and feeling like my creative identity is everything to me now that I'm successful, now that I have a career. Because the reality is that it's just one small piece. You cannot isolate your creative career from everything else. Everything is intertwined. So it's about managing these contradictory truths, as I call it in the post, that is what enables you to thrive here and to understand that there is no finish line. There is no point in which you're like, all right, the arc is done. No, it just keeps going. And that is the point. So those are the three stages of the arc of the practical creator.
Yeah. Whew. That sounds like a pretty awesome conversation with your wife. She's just, you're like, really? Like that I'm there. Cool. Like I didn't think so, but it sounds like that you were thinking then that you were going to keep going no matter what. And so it sounds like then that's also that indicator, that validation was nice to hear, but at the end of the day, you were going to keep writing, you were going to keep producing either way, because of that's how you are. And that's where you kind of are in that stage, right?
Yeah. Like I knew that I was going to keep going, but I felt like I needed to hit something in order for it to feel like I could tell myself that I have a career, that this was something that really was a serious endeavor for me. And I didn't know what that something was. That's the thing. And I think that the easiest way to define what that something is like how much money you make from your creative endeavor, right? So let's just throw out a number like 100K. If I make 100K this year in revenue, like, that's when I tell myself I have a creative, career, right? But like, what if it's 10K? What if it's 5K? Like, because if you view it in that sense, like if you tell yourself that it's 100K, but I'm only making 5K, then you're gonna always think like, okay, I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet, right? But also like, if you hit the 100K thing, it's very plausible that you'll still feel like you're not there yet, because on route to there, And I write about this in a piece called The Mini Worlds of Enough, which is another thing where whenever you're en route to something that you feel like, okay, when I'm there, I could define that this is either enough or define this as a career.
Yeah.
The thing is, en route to getting there, you develop so many different skills, and the people that you surround yourself with also shift immeasurably. And what happens is that what you previously set as enough will inevitably shift, not because your goalpost moving, but because your identity has fundamentally changed, right? Going from zero to, let's say, 50K a year, making, you know, doing your creative thing, teaches you so much about this space, opens up so many different worlds, right? Like, for example, I didn't know about courses when I started this thing. And as I progressed through it, I learned about it. And it's like, oh, crap, there's this whole world here. And then what happens when you get into the world? Well, oh, you see that person doing this, this person doing that. And your definition of it changes with every new world you enter into. So that's the thing, is that if you peg it to something, this dynamic will keep happening, right? So I think what my wife, when she mentioned that, what it did for me was that it was like, oh, it's not tied to any particular metric, to anything particularly measurable, really. It's not a quantitative phenomenon. It's much more of a psychological one. So that's what that helped me understand. And also the fact that it came from my wife, who can see, okay, like, how does Lauren spend his days on a day-to-day basis? How does he direct his energy? What is he like as a human being, as a husband, as a father, all this stuff? Like, all these things are aligned as someone that is that has a career here, right? So that's what it really made me click. That it really helped me click that. And then it became much more easier to understand what I was doing with this, and that I don't need to hit anything. Like, I'm already here.
You're already there. Love that. That's great advice. And probably pretty good kind of like parting thoughts to people, that they already are whatever stage that they're at. And there's the balances, right? Like, if you're already in stage one, you're in stage one, embrace that. If you're in stage two, embrace that. If you're in stage three, embrace that. And, you know, by doing the work on a consistent basis, that'll open up new worlds for you. What else would you say, or is there anything else that you'd say to people that are trying to pursue this practical creator path? And while you're thinking about that, please let listeners know more where they can learn about this post and a lot of the other great work that you're up to.
So when it comes to creative endeavors, there's a bunch of like stereotypical bins that you can fall under to say, okay, this is a creative career, this is an endeavor, this is not, and so forth. But it all comes down to one word, which is agency, right? And whatever you feel like you have agency over, that could be that is a function of your creative spirit talking, in a sense, right? So you may not think of, I don't know, like a bricklayer as like a creative endeavor, but if that person is doing that because they find this challenge so invigorating, and they're there sitting there like looking at the angling of everything and trying to figure out better ways to do this because it just excites them so much, that is a creative endeavor. Whereas on the flip side, if there's a painter out there painting beautiful murals, but when you talk to him, he's just like, yeah, you know, like, my mom is a famous painter, and like, I just have to like carry on the family name, you know, so I'm doing this, then that's not a creative endeavor. So whatever you feel like you could direct your agency toward, it's not defined by the art form itself. It's defined by what you feel like you are directing your sense of excitement and what brings that out in you, that you have what is called a creative endeavor. And I think the thing that I've seen over and over again is people that tell me like, yeah, Lawrence, yo, I'm not creative, man. Like, I'm not creative like you are. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I know that I'm good at doing what I'm doing. I'm making a lot of money, or I have prestige here. But like, you know, like, even if you were to tell me, hey, what's something that like excites you creatively, I don't know what to say because I'm not a creative person. Well, I think the question there is like, well, what invigorates you? What excites you? And let's just say it's looking at the markets, right? There are many, many amazing creatives that are like financial analysts and data scientists. And like, you know, the way they express that creativity may be through writing, it may be through building models, like, I don't know. But to them, what they're doing is highly creative, right? So if you think that all this creativity mumbo jumbo doesn't apply to you, I assure you that it does if you use the compass of your agency to direct your attention to. So I'll leave that as a parting thought. And you could find my work on moretothat.com. That's pretty much my online home. And you could check out all my work there. There's a lot there to sort through. All kinds of topics. I touch everything. So hopefully you find there that something that resonates with you.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Lawrence.
Yeah. Thanks, David.
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.